This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast wishing you a happy new year. Also, we'll be looking at things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas. Wait a minute. Pop culture bits thrown in. Yes! Greetings and salutations, my people! You know what? I haven't talked to myself in so long, I'm shouting at myself. I'm a bit out of practice. I hope you ended the year in style and, didn't overdo it, like myself on Eve Eve. How I pay for that. Oh my god. Anyways, we're back, baby. We are back. 2024 is here. And believe it or not, there's no low-key start to the year. I mean, I thought it was going to be a bit crap, and it's absolutely rammed with quality content. So after this week's catch-up on the triple T-threats of The Tourist Season 2, Taskmaster New Year's Treat, and Traitors Season 2, let's see what else is coming our way. So, for another year, shall we begin? And yes, I'm back straight away. There's no clip for this one because Society of the Snow on Netflix is directed by J.A. Bayona, who did The Orphanage and A Monster Calls, and it's Spain's official Oscar submission for 2023. This one is your movie of the week, folks. I'm going to try call out a movie of the week. Yeah, but you know, some weeks there won't be a movie of the week. But this one, oh my god. So this is the latest version of the harrowing true story of the 1972 crash of a plane carrying a Uruguayan rugby team in the Andes, which, yes, previously was chronicled in the book Alive and its 1993 film adaptation. The story of 16 survivors who were forced into cannibalism to avoid starvation is well known, but that is only part of this much more subtle movie, as they also had to avoid constant avalanches, ridiculous near-death freezing temperatures. Oh my god, this looks stunning in every way. It has been receiving raves across the festival circuits all year. This, hands down, is your first must-watch movie of 2024. That is the Spanish drama Society of the Snow, which is now on Netflix. It's going to be harrowing, but it's also going to be an absolute cracker. Can't wait.
I'm not your prisoner. I'm here to negotiate.
We have no problem killing your son.
I dare you to go after Charles.
About Charles. All these years, you were hiding someone else.
Bruce, our family is head of the Jade Dragons.
So we're like criminals.
You could have told me that.
We were trying to keep you safe.
Yeah, nice fucking work.
Michelle Yeoh and Justin Chin head an all-Asian cast in The Brother's Son on Netflix, which is an action-packed and darkly comic family crime drama set in both Taiwan and Los Angeles. When the head of a Taiwanese triad is shot by an assassin, his eldest son Charles, played by Chin, heads to Los Angeles to protect his mother and brother, who's been completely sheltered from the truth of his family's shady background. This looks pretty decent quality stuff. Black comedy, 8 episodes, manic, thrilling, fun, heads getting slapped all over the gaff. Sure, why wouldn't you? That is the new series, The Brother's Son, which is now all up on Netflix.
I've been reading that the brain is like a muscle. That's why getting over a death is so hard. Because your brain has been trained to feel things for a person. When they go away, your head is still operating under the impression that it should feel those things for that person, like muscle memory.
I think we'll hold off on the will for today.
Do I look older to you? I feel like I've aged a lot.
No.
Yes, your husband just died. You're allowed. My God.
Dan Levy from Schitt's Creek makes his feature directorial debut and also writes and stars in the new movie Good Grief on Netflix. In this rom-com, dramedy, whatever you want to call it, this one finds him playing a man who attempts to deal with his grief over the unexpected death of his husband by heading to Paris with his two close friends, who are played by Ruth Negger and Himesh Patel. Also starring Luke Evans, this one looks extremely sweet, if somewhat sad and poignant. But then again, Blue Monday is fast approaching, so maybe you could, you know, have a glass of Nosecco and just weep the day away. So anyway, that's Good Grief, which is now on Netflix. And speaking of Good Grief, James May, our man in India, who has been to Japan and Italy, is now heading to, India for Prime Video in the new season of his travel series that sees him explore and embrace different cultures around the world. Listen, you either like James May and this kind of stuff, and, you know, I know it's quite popular in Ireland. I see it regularly appearing on the charts for Prime in the Irish charts. I'm like, what's going on? So it's for you. Do it. I'll leave you to it. That's James May, our man in India, which is now on Prime Video, and I'll just back away slowly because me, I'm off to catch up on three absolutely belter documentaries that are now streaming, and we'll start with this one.
Today, the Department of Justice has filed a civil complaint seeking to forfeit and recover more than $1 billion in assets stolen from 1MDB.
1MDB was a development fund created to help the development of infrastructure in Malaysia.
There were murmurings. Some transactions were not kosher, but we had to get some evidence.
There was a guy that had the inside data, $700 million into this account.
Man on the Run on Netflix is an insightful look at the saga of the 1MDB madness, absolute madness, and the kind of observation of the globalist capitalist system being a bit corrupt and shite. Absolute crazy stuff. If 1MDB sounds familiar, well, that's because it's the story of Jolo, dubbed the Asian Great Gatsby. This, after all, is the guy who famously financed Martin Scorsese's Oscar-nominated blockbuster, The Wolf of Wall Street, and partied with the stars like Leo DiCaprio on super yachts and supermodels and five-star hotels and pinged them all vast amounts of cash for their appearances, and all supported from a sovereign wealth fund established in 2009, initially with the purpose of benefiting the people of Malaysia. Oh, how they benefited. Absolutely mad stuff. I still can't get my head around that The Wolf of Wall Street was funded by this dude. You just gotta see it to believe it. Absolute crazy. That's Man on the Run, which is now on Netflix. And during that period between Christmas and New Year, when you were in your expanded pants and kind of tired and emotional or hungover, two little sneaky ones popped onto Netflix that we need to flag because, again, Homedingers.
The 80s were a time when the world was changing. There was a deep concern that the youth of America was taking a wrong turn. You know, what do you do?
Steve Cardozano was a genius.
I think he was ahead of his time. He had this great idea.
It's called the Challenger Foundation. The kids are worn down until they're good again.
We're made better by struggle. It's a simple equation.
Hell Camp, Teen Nightmare on Netflix looks at a camp in the Utah desert set up in the 80s, which promised that it would wear down troubled teens and cure them of their delinquency and wild, wild ways. Oh, sketch already. Let's just say things did not go according to plan, or maybe it was a shit show. But that was a better description of what occurred. This is not one of those ridiculous reality shows of the noughties, but more a real hellhole that kids were sent to, probably because they were listening to heavy metal music. As one survivor said, the hardest thing about being there was knowing that my parents did it to me. Oh, bleak, bleak stuff. Hey, for some people, they'd be like the good old days, but feck off. Absolutely mad. I think in Ireland in the 80s, this was called the Gaeltacht. I could be wrong, but that's just my personal opinion. Anyway, Hell Camp Teen Nightmare is now on Netflix.
Our pitch to the world was that we were going to create a debit card where you'd be able to spend your cryptocurrency in real time.
It's an electronic money.
Something about bitcoins or something.
I was all about CentroTech. I was like, look at this. This makes sense.
Just watching something become extremely valuable, it's like a drug.
Tons of money just starts flooding in. 100,000, another 100,000.
It was probably the most exciting thing I've ever experienced in my life.
We didn't know anything about this business, but it didn't matter at all. It was too easy.
Ray, Visa's just saying this company, Centra, is not allowed to issue a card with Visa on it.
BitConned on Netflix is another true crime doc which looks at, a tech unicorn that, of course, fell apart at the seams, following numerous individuals who exploited the freewheeling cryptocurrency market to scam millions from investors and bankroll their lavish lifestyles. What's amazing here is the douche factor of these guys. I mean, as you watch it, the remorse, the moral codes, nope, not a piece of it, not a hint, just give me a big gaff, a fancy house and more champagne, please. It's a gripping, insane watch and you will enjoy it very much. So that is BitConned now on Netflix. You Are What You Eat, a twin experiment on Netflix, is a scientific experiment docu-series where identical twins adopt different diets and lifestyles for 8 weeks to see how food impacts the body. Ah yes, just what you truly need to start off your new year, new you. I already know I'm going to be on the bad side of this experiment. So I'll just get those salty snacks, sit back, relax, and cheer for the poor, poor twin that's eating all the crap. Oh, when a bell rings, an angel gets his wings. Anyway, yeah, let's see what happens here. I don't know why I'd watch it, because I just know I don't need to be told bad is not good, because it is good. That is You Are What You Eat, a twin experiment, now on Netflix.
Reading people is my job. My read is, they are good people, caught up in a bad situation.
Court is now in session.
Will the defendant please rise?
Based on Jimmy McGovern's BBC crime anthology of the same name from a few years back, Accused on Paramount Plus depicts a court case in which viewers don't know the crime the person is accused of doing or how they got there, but will show the audience how an ordinary person taking one wrong turn can change their life forever. While definitely going to be less subtle and bleak than McGovern's version, this was on Fox in the US last year and it's finally being released here on Paramount Plus. With it also being from the folks behind 24 and Homeland, you gotta admit, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you bail in? It's going to be a bit of a hit, I'd say. And it has a pretty decent ensemble cast. Featuring over the various cases, you've got people like Michael Chiklis, Rhea Perlman, Rachel Bilson, Jack Davenport, Abigail Breslin, and in our lead role, Wendell Pierce. Who doesn't love a bit of Wendell Pierce? So that is Accused, now on Paramount Plus.
It's a crime story.
The boys have experienced a lot of trauma over the years. Their mother's addiction.
Her leaving their father.
Oh, fuck, fuck, oh, fuck! Help, help, help!
Okay, show's over. Thank you.
And the criminal activity of their stepdad.
It's all right, sir. My stepdad's just making a drug deal.
Boy Swallows Universe on Netflix is a new Australian limited drama series which follows a young boy growing up in the suburbs of 1980s Brisbane as he faces the harsh realities of life and the looming dangers that threaten his family. A lost father, a mute brother, a mum in jail, a heroin dealer for a stepfather, and a notorious criminal for a babysitter. It's not as if Eli's life isn't complicated enough already. Oh my god, this kid is just trying to do the right thing and learn what it takes to be a decent lad, but life just keeps throwing crap in his way. Based on the 2018 autobiography by Trent Dalton, this one stars Phoebe Tonkin, Travis Fimmel and Sophie Wilde, and in fairness looks like another pretty decent Aussie. Loads of decent Aussie dramas in the last year or two, so keep them up, lads. Keep them up. So that is Boy Swallows Universe, which is now on Netflix. And Delicious in Dungeon on Netflix. Dungeons, dragons, and a delicious monster stew. Yes, this one's an odd one. It sees adventurers foray into a cursed, buried kingdom to save their friend, cooking up a storm along the way. It's a new animated series based on the manga series, also of the same name, and it's beautifully batshit, full of insane recipes along the way, and as we all know, one should never face off against a dragon on an empty stomach. Absolutely weird. That's Delicious in Dungeon, now on Netflix.
Wrong show.
That French chef of yours is really something.
Pretty extraordinary.
My board was content with nothing when all we had was nothing. But now that we have something, we want more something and less nothing.
And speaking of food, Julia Season 2 returns to Sky and Now TV, where we explore the life of television chef Julia Child, who pioneered the cooking show genre during an evolving time in American history. Sarah Lancashire returns again to brilliantly portray Child. Every time I watch her, I'm just like, where is Sarah Lancashire? I can't see her. She's so good, so good. And she's aided and abetted yet again by her husband and sidekick, David Hyde Pierce. This season sees Julia grappling with her newfound celebrity status and being introduced to the concept of product placement, and well, that's not going to go well. So anyway, very exciting stuff. That is Julia Season 2, which is now on Sky and Now TV. And rounding off your streaming for the week, we've two movies. First up, we have Foe on Prime Video, which, yeah, you may remember I kind of reviewed. Paul Mescal and Saoirse Ronan star opposite each other in this ho-hum sci-fi romantic drama, which follows Hen and Junior as their quiet farm life is disturbed when they invite a stranger into their home who offers them a surprise proposal. Tink! A middling episode of The Twilight Zone or Black Mirror. No, not even Black Mirror. It's not even that dark. I didn't believe their chemistry. Do you know what? It probably just wasn't a movie for the cinema. I'm not letting it off the hook, but maybe, just maybe, sitting at home, you might appreciate it more. If you haven't seen it in the cinema, it's a blessing. Maybe you'll shout at me and go, what are you talking about? This is amazing. Me, personally, absolute muck. But what can you do? That's unfair. It's just average. How about that? It's just average. So that is Foe, which is now on Prime Video. And finally on this week, Prime Video. Just as they announced that they're going to start including ads from the start of February on their streamer. And if you don't want to see ads, you have to pay more money. This is the crap they're putting out. Oh, man. Sorry. I back up. Freelance is now on Prime Video, and this stars John Cena as an ex-special forces operative stuck in a dead-end job who accepts a gig from his old military buddy Christian Slater to provide security detail for a disgraced journalist played by Alison Brie. Yeah, military coups, dictators, running through the jungle, muck of the highest order. And I don't mean muck in a good way. I mean shocking, tragic. What the hell is going on here? I like Alison Brie. I like John Cena. I like Christian Slater. I hate this movie. There you go. You've heard it all. What a way to finish. What a finish with a bang. Absolutely love it. And that is your streaming for the week. And yes, Amazon, I'm still judging you for charging people an extra $2.99 just so they don't have to watch ads. You're some share of bleepity bleeping bleeps. It's like I'm shocked that that you wouldn't do this. And welcome to the New World Order. All these wonderful streamers who promised that ads would never be on their little boxes or on their little streaming devices. Here we go. 2024 will be the year of the ads, and you'll have to pay more money to avoid the feckin' things. I thought we got rid of normal TV to avoid ads, and here they come. Soapbox, get off your soapbox, get onto cinema, stop talking. At least there's no ads in cinema yet, although people are calling for intermissions for long movies. No, I'm not even gonna go there. Right, cinema time. And I know there's ads at cinemas. I mean, during the movie. I think receiving the email while recording the podcast from Amazon may have officially sent me over the edge. Oh, jeez. Stop! Stop talking! Well, I'm just scared of
death. When we all fall asleep, where do we go?
He kissed me.
No, he didn't.
When we were fixing up the pool...
Stop!
They said it hadn't been used in 15 years.
Maybe they weren't pool people.
This is not for the kids.
Night Swim is a new horror flick that follows the Waller family, who move into a new house where they slowly discover that an unknown supernatural presence haunts the backyard swimming pool. Yes, you heard me correctly. This is not a Shaggy Dog story. It's a haunted swimming pool story. Kings of Horror James Wan and Jason Blum serve as producers under their Atomic Monster and Blumhouse Productions banners. And this is the first film from the two companies to be released following their recent merger on January 2nd, 2024. So yes, Atomic Monster and Blumhouse are together forever. And you know what? Who doesn't love a bit of horror in January? It's a popular time in January to blow away those cobwebs with some decent jumps and scares. And happily for this here horror nut, Night Swim delivers. It is definitely helped by the casting of Wyatt Russell and Kerry Condon in the roles of slowly freaking out parents. And the teen actors are even pretty decent too. The premise is very M. Night Shyamalan and actually has a bit more meat to the story than you'd expect for one of these, even going in a direction you may not have been expecting. It's a kind of slow build, slow burn of a horror that doesn't rely totally on jump scares for no reason. But when they do arrive, yeah, you're probably going to jump. This is Bryce McGuire's debut as a feature director, and it's based on a short film he already directed and wrote. And I can see the newly formed Atomic Monster Blumhouse, whatever they're called, I forgot to check if they're actually called something. He'll definitely be getting trusted again in the future based on this one, with possibly one of their bigger horror properties. So while not a Megan or a Five Nights at Freddy's, which drew in a very large non-horror crowd, this will definitely appeal to horror fans and groups of teens who just love being scared silly together. This one will wholeheartedly scratch that squeamish itch. Oh, say that on a fruit pastille. Anyway, a decent start to the year. Night Swim is now in cinemas. Quickly, two other movies that were released on New Year's Day that may have been missed but are now out in the wild for you to see. First up, we have Priscilla. This one has arrived with a wave of hype, winning awards. It's a biographical drama written, directed and produced by Sofia Coppola, based on the 1985 memoir Elvis and Me by Priscilla Presley, who serves as an exec producer on this one. It follows the life of Priscilla, played by Kaylee Spaney, and her romantic relationship with Elvis Presley, played by Mr. Saltburn, Jacob Elordi. This movie is so not Baz Luhrmann's Elvis, and could easily be subtitled, Elvis, he was a bit of a dick, just about. Kaylee Spaney is absolutely fantastic as Priscilla, and Jacob Elordi does a low-key, less showy version of Elvis compared to Mr. Austin Butler. But ultimately for me, it was all a bit Sofia Coppola. And I don't mean the good Sofia Coppola. That was a very long time ago, folks. Hate to break it to you, that was a very long time ago. Soft focus cameras, low mood lighting, beautiful costumes and designs, killer soundtrack, with barely any Elvis, by the way. But alas, ultimately, it all felt a bit hollow, a bit meh. And meh was the mood for me after the film. Basically, it's an above-average TV movie that I can't see getting any love during the awards season. It's just another showy indie movie that pretends to be so much more than the sum of its parts, that folks will either love, and they will probably love, or they will meh. Right down the middle. Split camp. Ultimately, for all its hype, this one was a disappointment for me. So that's Priscilla, now in cinemas. And finally, this week in cinemas, we have One Life. This follows British humanitarian Nicholas Winton, who helped hundreds of Jewish children in German-occupied Czechoslovakia to hide and flee in 1938-39, just before the beginning of World War II. It stars Anthony Hopkins as he reflects back on what was and what was not achieved, with flashbacks of him played by Johnny Flynn, Helen Bonham Carter, and Lena Olin also star. At first I was thinking, oh my god, I'm cursed, it's another TV movie of the week. The vibe was there, coming off the screen. But whenever Hopkins was front and centre, he just commanded your attention as the curmudgeonly old guy who doesn't even recognise or contemplate the amazing achievements of his past. As both past and present timelines progress, it's hard not to get totally emotionally involved in the story. And sure, once we get to Esther Ranson and That's Life on a Sunday night, feck me, it didn't matter if I rated this movie or not. I was blubbing and wailing down the back row. Holy, I mean, it was a mess. It was a hot mess. Thank Christ I had tissues. I don't know why I had them, but I had. So yes, a decent enough flick that goes hard after those heartstrings and plucks them like slash wood on a November rain guitar solo. Hopkins again is wonderful, fantastic, and the cast around him also do a good job. Finding out later that debut director James Hawes had previously directed Black Mirror and a lot of Slow Horses, it made complete sense because the movie was extremely well crafted. Bring tissues. Shed loads of tissues. You've been warned, because One Life is now at cinemas. And there you go. Absolutely fantastic. That is your cinema for the week. And I think now we should possibly look at three things that we noticed in pop culture this week. Right then, let's start in a place that you know and I know and we all know that I love. And that is numbers. Oh, numbers, numbers, numbers. You know how much I love box office numbers. And today we're going to look at the final figures. Drum roll. Was that? I don't know. And at the winners and losers across the Hollywood studios, as they have been revealed in the trades. And, well, congratulations to Universal, who have come out tops for 2023's market share at the worldwide box office, dethroning the superpower that is Disney, who have been untouched in that position since 2016. That's a pretty impressive feat. The 24 movies released by Universal worldwide brought in an estimated $4.91 billion in worldwide ticket sales, compared to Disney's estimated $4.83 billion for their 17 titles which they released. Of course, Super Mario Brothers, which earned $1.36 billion globally, and Christopher Nolan's R-rated Oppenheimer, with its unbelievable Jeff number of $952 million, led Universal's top-grossing films of 2023. And Fast X, or Fast 10, despite wobbling at the US box office, still made $705 million worldwide. Although, as you may remember, at a production cost of nearly $340 million, and a marketing budget of $80 million, it was pretty unprofitable on a cinema release and must ultimately be deemed a bit of a disappointment for Universal, even though they have another one coming in 2 years. But all these three were still in the top five grossing movies globally. Other draws for Universal were Blumhouse's Five Nights at Freddy's at $290 million off a paltry $20 million budget, and Megan, which made $181 million off a $12 million budget. So, you know, sometimes it's good to budget. And finally, for Universal on the positive, despite a slow start, Puss in Boots: The Last Wish ended up making about $480 million at the global box office, and bodes well for the return of the Shrek franchise. So, fair dinkums there, Puss, fair dinkums. Flops were quite a rarity for Universal this year, but I'm looking at you, Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken, The Voyage of the Demeter, and Renfield. Oh my god, those movies did stink up the place. But Universal won't care, because they're king of the world! So, what about Disney? They released 7 less movies, yet were still only beaten by about $80 million. That is in a year when Disney had an absolute mare, with howlers like The Marvels, Haunted Mansion, and Wish, which all lost them hundreds of millions of dollars, and they also had some massive disappointments like Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Ant-Man, Quantumania, oh, don't send me back there, and The Little Mermaid. With so many of these large brands and IPs underperforming, this opened the door for Universal to sneak right in. Successes? Yeah. Guardians 3, maybe? Yeah, let's go with that. And while all the disappointments brought in chunks of change, their production costs, which was a big problem for Disney, were way too high for those movies to be profitable. So handing over that crown to Universal will obviously hurt Disney and some of the brands like Marvel and Pixar, but Bob Iger was already in fighting mood pre-Christmas and had already called out their missteps and promised to fix them. "We lost focus," he said. "We lost focus." Don't feel too bad for Disney. As I said, worst year ever, yet beaten by only 80 million at the global box office. Releasing far fewer movies, had 4 of the top 10 movies globally at the box office, and was still nearly 1 billion ahead of third place. The Mouse House will be back, even if Steamboat Willie has entered the public domain. But Universal won't care. They are dancing down the street. Open top bus. Open top bus. Warner Brothers can hug, high five and thank Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie for putting 1.44 billion in worldwide ticket sales through their coffers. And as I said, putting them at number 3 in the global market share with 3.84 billion. Just don't mention the DC Extended Universe movies, please, which unfortunately fell off a cliff. A very tall cliff. And they're still falling. At least Wonka rounded off their year in a happy place. Sony came in fourth with 2.09 billion globally. Take a bow, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And Paramount rocked in at fifth with a global revenue of 2.03 billion. Thanks in large part to the somewhat disappointing Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 box office. Not the movie. The movie was amazing. The box office was disappointing. And finally, a shout out to Lionsgate, who cracked 1 billion in global box office for the first time in 5 years. Thanks in large part to John Wick Chapter 4, The Hunger Games, and the latest Saw movie. John Wick was a particular standout, earning 440 million worldwide. Good times, good times. So there you go, the global box office for 2023. Some interesting bits and bobs there. Well, for me anyway. Being a stat on air, then, well, who doesn't love a good old studio ranking? Again, maybe just me. As for 2024, global ticket sales are expected to suffer badly and fall due to the strike and movie delays. But which studio will rise to the top? Can Disney reclaim its crown? Can Universal hold the line? Or will Warner step in and steal it all? The release schedules and audience reactions to those movies will ultimately be the decider. And as always, I'll be here for it. Oh, yes! Bring it on. Bring it on. Next up, and while we're on the subject of bestsellers, you know, I do love my books. And again, I'm always fascinated by the end of year bestsellers lists. Well, 2023's best-selling books in Ireland were revealed by Nielsen BookScan this week. And as always, it has made for a fascinating top 10. Number one in the land, the book that everybody's reading and surging out of the blocks, those Booker-winning blocks, was Paul Lynch and his Prophet Song, with 45,501 copies sold across hardbacks and trade paperbacks. One World Publications, take a bow, very good. He literally, lastminute.com, surged and won it all. Strange Sally Diamond by Liz Nugent from PRH came second with 42,509. The Bee Sting, a tale of two Pauls, two roads diverged. Paul Murray, again from PRH, sold 42,063. Pretty impressive for a book that didn't win the Booker. It Ends With Us by Colleen Hoover. Is Colleen Hoover never not on the top 10? From Simon & Schuster, did 38,554. At number 5, yes, Royalty. Royalty in the chart. Spare by Prince Harry. Is he still royalty? Who knows? From PRH, 38,388. Then we have a double whammy of food. Bit of food, Board of Lunch and Board of Lunch, the healthy slow cooker book and the healthy air fryer book, both by Nathan Anthony from PRH at 38,037. And then the Ashlings said farewell. Ashling Ever After, Emer McLeisid and Sarah Breen bid us adieu from Gill Books with 35,293. At number 9 we have My Father's House by Joseph O'Connor, again from PRH with 31,015. And the number 10 book in the land, Hike Life, My 50 Favourite Hikes in Ireland, from Roz Purcell and Bonnier Books with 30,285. PRH won the annual publisher battle with an extremely dominant, some would say quite obnoxious display of owning 6 of the top 10 titles sold in the country, which, yes, was a pretty different story to the photo finish experienced in Hollywood. Sadly, no kids' books made the top 10. This does make me sad. As usually, either a Wimpy or a Guinness World Records make it in there, but they could only manage 11th and 13th. And for those keeping score, and there are people keeping score, no Irish published kids' books made the top 100 bestseller chart, but it was Nina Carberry and Julia Sykes's Rowan Tree Stables and Lucy Kendi's Friendship Fairies, which were the best performing Irish published children's books. So there you go. There you go. Oh, all the numbers. I apologise if you don't like numbers, but that's life. Numbers, figures, charts, rabbit holes. Off I go, and I make no apology for it. Personally, I think it's a beautiful thing. I'd love to have a murder wall and look at them all dissect away. And sure, if it wasn't your thing, you probably fast forwarded the pod to the point where we are right now. By the way, I know it's 3 things, and that was only 2. So quickly, because it's getting long in the tooth here. Mindhunter, Netflix, David Fincher. There's no way it's coming back. It's toast. It cannot happen. Or can it? Will it? Will Mr. Fincher... What's that now? Anyway, I'll just leave that little there. Little rumblings going on. Rumblings. Possibly just rumblings, but... Oh, please, don't be more than rumblings. Please. With that bombshell, this is again where I say Happy New Year to you and to yours. It's so wonderful to be... What was that? It's so wonderful to be back talking absolute guff. And for now, this is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast. Wishing you all the best, and until next week, stay safe and binge happy. Okay. Well, hello there, post-credits traveller. Welcome yet again. A place, as you know, where anything goes. Anything. Absolutely anything. Truths will be told and rambling tales are a given. Sadly. Today, I was thinking, do you know what the people need? They don't really, but do you know what they do? No, they do, Dave. Well, I'm gonna pull back the curtain or look under the hood on a thought process which I way overthink every week when doing the pod. Totally, totally overthink. I mean, it's a weekly roller coaster, folks. You don't understand what I go through. So I need you to understand. And some of you may not even notice what at the end result. You may not even know what it is. Because today we're talking episode names. Titles of episodes. And by God, do I put too much effort into them. Like The Next Man, I love a good pun. If I can find a quality pun worthy of the pun master genres that will tie into a movie or a streaming show, well, that's the one for that week. And that's, you know, that's how my thought process starts. If puns are hard to come by, well, an attempted play on words maybe for those releases will be my next port of call, you know, mix them up, play them around. Or if I'm still floundering, or like most weeks, if something else pops into my head, maybe using a song title and quirking it up a bit. That'll launch me off. And then what happens is usually I have all 3 processes. And then I feck them all in a mixer and go, no, I'm still thinking. And The episode name can change literally 4 to 5 times a week before I commit. I tell you, overthinking is officially my middle name. So let's take a look at this week, episode 82. By the time you're listening to this, I've committed, I assume, unless I've left it blank. But while recording, I think I've come to my decision. Looking at this week's releases, Society of the Snow is the big front-loaded movie. It's got all the hype, it's got all the Oscar buzz. So I immediately thought, dead Snowits Society. Oh my God, amazing. But that was quickly followed by, oof, that's a bit dark. I really like it, but it feels a bit icky. In fairness, if this was a fictional movie, it probably would have won hands down. But alas, it's not. So my better side came out and said, no, step away. So then Night Swimming popped into my head, a cracker REM song that I love and perfectly timed for the fairly decent Night Swim horror movie. And I was feeling good about myself. Feeling good. Yeah, I got it. Done. Don't have to worry, overthink it. Don't have to lie there in bed thinking up puns and stupid things. But then I copped I was doing a podcast for January 5th. And that was going to be complete bleeding tumbleweed with regards to content. So as a nod to the yearly tradition and the lack of decent streaming and cinema content, I thought, do you know what? It's going to be a dry January. And it became the front runner. It's a dry Jan. Perfect. Didn't want to put tumbleweed in the title. Just dry January. Subtle. But you know what? Then I pulled together the list of contents. And as you know by now, what the actual? It's a feckin' bumper week, surprisingly loaded with top-notch content, and the dry plan went out the door. So yes, Night Swimming, it definitely was. That's it. It's done. Night Swimming. But wait, folks. People are actually doing Dry January, which means no pub, no alcohol, no friends. Weather is dark and muck, and they're going to need all the cinema and streaming content to save them. So in fact, it's a perfect week to be dry Januarying, because we have all these distractions. Wonderful. And I also like the idea that folks think that I'm doing dry January, when in fact, I'm having a wet one. So that's where I ended up, and I'd like to think that is where I stayed. But remember, post-credit traveller, you and only you. You're in a small, special group, because you will always have that nugget of the dead Snowit Society in your secret locker, and surely that is ultimately why you come here for this complete nonsense. And with that meandering tale now out of the way, have a good one, folks. See you on the 12th, and let me sneak peek you. It's an absolute monster of a week for new content. You're going to love it. Right, laters.
Night swimming deserves a quiet night. The photograph on the dashboard, taken years ago, turned around backwards so the windshield shows. Every street light reveals a picture in reverse. Still it's so much clearer, I forgot my shirt at the water's edge. The moon is low tonight.